88 to 91.
Radio 2.
The Big Book of Pop. World Encyclopedia of Rock and Roll. The entire internet. Throw them all out.
Do you find that amusing?
And replace them with The Blagger's Guide. Radio's cut out and keep guide to the entire history of popular music. Did you hear that? In soundbite size 4.
Get on with it, I'm on a double yellow.
Hello, I'm David Quantick. And welcome to The Blagger's Guide, which this week is coming from New York in 1965. I'm standing at the back because I'm scared that the very first concert by The Velvet Underground!
Shut up! Ist der Underwater auch der Weltwurst?
Sorry! Spot the ringer there? That's right, it was, of course, the original Roadrunner by Jonathan Richman's Modern Lovers, featuring, why not,
Blagger's Fact.
Keyboards by Jerry Harrison, later to be the one nobody can remember in Talking Heads. No, not the Alan Bennett play. But me digress. Jonathan Richman was possibly the first person to be obsessed with the Velvet Underground. He even wrote a song about them.
How in the world were they making that sound? Velvet Underground.
Velvet singer Lou Reed was less impressed. He said,
"No, no, listen to me. I will not be held responsible for Jonathan Richman."
But then, Lou Reed is a c**k. Nevertheless, the importance of the Velvets, as we call them, cannot be underestimated. Formed in 1965 when commercial pop writer Lou met classically trained Welsh cellist John Cale after starting a band called The Primitives, whose sole claim to fame was,
"Here you go, way too fast.
No. Whose sole claim to fame was a novelty dance single called Do the Ostrich. The Velvets swiftly became the house band at Andy Warhol's art event, The Exploding Plastic Inevitable, which was sort of like your local disco, only with whips and trannies. Soon, they were always hanging around the factory.
What sort of things did it make, this factory?
It wasn't that sort of a factory. It was Andy Warhol's warehouse. And it wasn't a real factory at all, unless making trannies counts. And even then, they only turned out a couple of those a year, so they'd have gone bust.
Are we nearly there yet, Brown Owl?
Hush now, Dawn. I didn't realise this factory we'd arranged to visit would be so far.
Yes?
Oh, hello.
Yes?
Oh, hello. We're the Brownies from 3rd Plimpton B-Pack, and we've got a tour of your factory arranged.
I am Nico, chiseled goddess of rock. They dare.
Andy!
What is it, Nico?
These midgets say they've come to be shot by you.
Oh, look at them. How cute. Hey, come in. Meet the Velvet Underground. Play with the whips, why don't you?
I'm frightened. He's got a chicken for a wig.
It's all right, Dawn, dear. We've clearly made a mistake. We thought it was a snack factory.
It is a... oh, snack. Sorry.
But soon, the Velvets left Andy and Nico. They now had Mo Tucker on drums, who played her kit like it was two expensive Louis Vuitton suitcases, and she was an airport baggage handler. And they had the late, great rhythm guitarist, Sterling Morrison, who, after he left the Velvets,
Blagger's Fact, Schweinhund,
became a tugboat captain. Despite making some more extraordinary music, losing John Cale and going rock, the Velvets were enormously unsuccessful. But it's their influence that counts. Impress your friends with this if they haven't heard it before. Legend has it that everyone who saw the Velvet Underground formed their own band. This seems so unlikely that in 1978, Granada Television's news show, Tell Us Some Things Please, checked it out.
Hello,
I'm Anthony and the Wilsons, and I'm here with some Americans. Tell me, sir, did you see the Velvet Underground?
I surely did, 3 times.
And did you form a band?
Yes, I did.
And what about you, madam?
Well, I saw the Velvet Underground 14 times, and I formed a band, too. They were named Call and All Spaniels.
And you, Sonny?
Yes, sir, I did.
Did anyone here see the Velvet Underground and not form a band?
I didn't.
Yes, you did, you liar.
Really? Proof at last that...
So, it's true. Everyone who saw the Velvets formed a band. Especially David Bowie. Who saw the Velvets in New York, went backstage, talked to Lou Reed for hours, and only some years later did the math and realised that Lou Reed had left the band some time ago. And in fact, he'd met...
Blagger's fact.
Doug Yule, Lou Reed's high-voiced replacement, who sang on the bizarre Velvets-credited album, Squeeze, which features hardly any original members of the Velvet Underground. Or of Squeeze, for that matter. But the importance of the Velvets grew and grew, helped by Bowie and his work on Lou Reed's only hit album, Transformer.
But she never lost her head, even when she was given hit.
And this. And this. And by the next generation of musicians who went on to invent the Velvets-based New Wave. It all means that the Velvet Underground are totally cool forever. Especially John Cale.
Hello! I'm War! That's right, War! Not the late 60s funk band, I'm actual War! As in... War!
Good God, y'all!
For far too long, people have been having a go at me.
War was stupid, and people stupid.
I'm not stupid, I'm fed up.
What is
What am I good for? I'm a valid system for furthering economic gain while fostering population control. And if it wasn't me, you wouldn't have had cool combat trousers as worn by damn women in All Saints.
Never, never, ever, ever felt so low.
And now, Neil Young's having a go. Neil Young! What have I ever done to him? I can't take it anymore.
And that's why I've recorded my own album.
Available now on Apocalypse Records, the new album from War. Featuring Culture Club as Stupid, Edwin Staff, What Is He Good For, Give War a Chance, and the new single, Living with Neil Young.
Hi, I'm David Quanti. Like, welcome.
To the Blagger's Guide to Los Angeles.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Los Angeles. Its name means the Angels, because we've got the Angel Islington, and Americans always have to go one better. And it is the most west coastally city in rock. It's the rock capital of California, because San Francisco is too.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small.
And two. L.A. encapsulates everything that is both good, bad, ugly, and yuh about rock and roll. NB. I say rock and roll because...
Blagger's footnote.
Los Angeles is not at all famous for soul, funk, blues, or anything non-white except...
Ha ha ha! Yeah! 9-2! Death Row Records!
And more of that later. But first, what do you get if you cross Chuck Berry...
All over St. Louis, and down in New Orleans...
...with preppy close harmony act, The Four Freshmen.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
I said freshman, not Frenchman. The answer is this.
All over Manhattan, and down the Hemingway, everybody's
the Beach Boys. So important to rock that we'll be doing them in another show.
Yeah, like we said, we do Manchester Part 2.
Put a cork in it. But just time to cover that faux pas with a...
Blaggers fact.
The four freshmen were not only a huge influence on the Beach Boys, but one of them was the dad of...
Don't call me baby, when she is waiting in the car.
Voice of the Beehive, who I like. Anyway, the Beach Boys and surf music, cue Dick Flaming Dale. Why don't we just show the whole bloody film? Bloody students. Anyway, again, surf music soon became dated and embarrassing. Those were the days. And a new wave crashed into town. New wave. Do you like it?
Gee, this crappy surf music sure is swell.
Sure is, Lisa. Say, where's that hunk of yours?
I had it lasered off. Oh, you mean hunk?
Yeah, where's Barry?
Chunk. Here I am, chicks. Have some Mary Jane.
Who's Mary Jane? And why is your hair so long? And why are you wearing beads and sandals?
Lisa, Barry's gone fag.
Yes, suddenly the breadheads had gone deadhead. Hollywood had become hippiewood. Sunset Boulevard was, I don't know, Sandals Boulevard. All because someone had crossed this...
I wanna hold your hand.
This.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
Oh, and come up with this.
Hey, Mr. Terry,
the Birds. Roger McGuinn, who used to be Jim, Crosby, Dibble and... Sorry, the Birds brought the tuneless poetry of Bob Dylan and the new rock sounds of the Beatles into the charts. And LA changed overnight. 1,000 new groups took on the Birds' new folk pop direction.
McGuinn and McGuire just are getting higher in LA, you know where that's at. And no one's getting fat except Mama Cat.
The Birds reacted to this by going country. Hiring overrated Posh-trian Western singer, Graham Parsons.
In my hour of darkness, in my time of need.
And then splitting up. One of them, the enormous... Lee talented David Crosby joined Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, the first ever harmony supergroup. Apart from ex-Bird Dave, there was Stephen Stills and Neil Young from Buffalo Springfield and Graham Nash from The Hollies. The Hollies? Was Freddie Garrity busy that day? CSNY, as they were called, were the Rubik's Cube of rock, in that they were only any good when all four of them were in it. Yeah, it doesn't quite work, that. Listen to their stylistic range. Here's Neil Young. Stephen Stills.
Do you think of me and how you left me crying? Are you thinking?
The Crosser.
And I don't really see why can't we go on as three?
And Graham Nash.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
They were stardust. They were golden. They were bobbins. But bobbins in a different way to...
Bring on through to the other side. Bring on through to the other side.
The Doors. The most overrated band in the world, unless you are...
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
French. Starting off as a bar band playing duff covers of overly obvious chart fare G-L-O-R-I-A. Gloria. The Doors then became a teeny bop band when singer Jim Morrison...
Fire!
Was still thin and leather panted enough to get on the cover of Teen Mags, while their best song, Hello Dolly,
Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name?
Was essentially a flancy remake of All Day and All of the Night, sung by a merry-go-round. And fame went to Jim's enormous head. He wrote poetry, he told people he was a lizard, and he got little Jim out on stage. And gave rise to a whole school of rock-liking that says rock stars have to be leather-panted poets who want to be lizards. And according to this ludicrously unconvincing audio tape, was a bad thing.
Father, I want to kill you. Yeah, that's a good line.
Mother. Mother. Do you want anything from the shops? No, that's not it. Hang on. Oh, crap. Hello?
I'm here!
Jesus, who are you?
I'm a lizard! So am I.
We all are, and we're very annoyed.
What? Am I on drugs? No, hang on. Let me rephrase that. Am I on so many drugs that I believe that 9 or 10 lizards are annoyed with me?
Look, Mr. Morrison, we're fed up with you saying you're a lizard, Chaz. You're no lizard.
No.
I never said I was a lizard. I said I was the lizard king.
Oh, well, that's all right then. Sorry to have bothered you. Come on, muchachos.
Ta-da.
Boy, that was peculiar. Now what? Yes?
When you say lizard king, are you claiming hereditary kingship?
Because that would mean you're a lizard. And you're not a lizard.
No, he most certainly isn't.
Look, for the last time...
Found the off switch. After the death of Lizard Jim, Los Angeles became a quieter place. Many artists moved to Laurel Canyon, where either they had sex with Joni Mitchell and wrote songs about it, or they were Joni Mitchell and wrote songs about having sex with someone else who'd had sex with Joni Mitchell. It was a deeply interlinked community where, if they'd only banned acoustic guitars, music would have been so much better in the 70s.
Sitting in a park in Paris, France, reading the news and it sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance.
Rock me on the water, sister, will you soothe my fever brow?
Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
And then one day, a new sound came along, inspired by the new Laurel Canyon vibe.
Desperado, why don't you come to your...
And the sound of treacle and sleep being turned into dollars. Have we got that effect? Yes, a new sound emerged. The sound of big flares, hairy chests, unmanly jewelry, and frizzy hair. Soft. Rock. Soft rock was the perfect music for Los Angeles in the 70s. Constant sunshine, powerful drugs, and way too much money made soporific... terrific. It was a time when all the cocaine in the world couldn't rouse snory old rock. Even those who mocked it, like future Eagle Joe Walsh.
I'm making records, my fans, they can't wait. They write me letters, tell me I'm great.
And the most snarky man in the history of pop, Randy, I really hate you, Newman.
Like another perfect day. I love LA.
Couldn't destroy the mood. By 1978, L.A. was a spent musical force. Until this happened.
Great pussy town for California, yeah.
But that's another story.
Like Manchester Part 2.
I'll blow you away.
Looking for an unusual musical holiday? Are you a man?
Famous for the fruit tree.
Does this make you go all funny?
Do you feel like a romance?
How about this?
Have you seen the land? Living by the breeze.
Have you got a slightly macabre fascination with musicians' mental health issues?
Why don't he knew my name?
Then join us.
What are these things for us?
On Nick Drake Canal Tours. We're nice and posh.
The trees on the hill with nothing to say.
But not afraid to show our emotions.
The air was beautiful.
Nick Drake Canal Tours. For the mature, acoustically leaning man. Not to be confused with downmarket James Blunt bumper boats.
Hello, Cleveland. And welcome to the Flagger's Guide to Stadium Rock. Yeah! Stadium rock is so called because it is a form of rock music that's best expressed in venues where manly sports are played. Hence, the popularity of a Tokyo wrestling stadium for lots of albums called...
Liger's Fact.
Live at the Budokan. Yes, had Cheap Trick recorded their only number one single live at the Romford Arts Centre, things might have been a lot different, especially if it was lesbian night. But I digress. Stadium Rock was caused by...
Lager's Fact.
The Beatles.
Hello.
Who found that they had to play bigger and bigger venues to crowds who were... louder than they were. This caused the Beatles to retire from touring, write music that couldn't be performed live, and end up playing their last gig three floors up in a street full of tailors. Other bands wished to avoid this, and so in the 1970s, with the invention of the Marshall Stack, as favoured by roadies and guitar shop nerks all over the world, Stadium Rock became possible. And with it came new bands, bands whose names were somehow related to places.
They said it would never happen.
Carry on my wayward son.
They said the world couldn't handle it. They came. Bands with the same names as places. Boston. Kansas. Chicago. Asia. With their huge MK riffs and their gatefold sleeves, truly it was the night of the killer logos. The night of the killer logos. Coming soon to a place with the same name as a band near you.
Great film. It's apparently, by the way, one of the rules of rock that the bigger or more grandiose the place your band was named after, the more crap your band is. So, Boston, not that bad. Kansas, awful. Asia, absolutely terrible. So let's almost hear it for Styx.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto, domo.
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 Who at least were honest when they named themselves after the River of the Dead.
Hey, Barry. What's that you're buying?
Oh, it's Led's music, Lisa. It's Styx.
Styx? I hate them. I like the Bay City Rollers.
Gay City Rollers, more like. Here, mister, how much is the Styx album?
Just 2 pennies, son.
2 pennies?
Yes, 2 cold, hard pennies placed over your dead eyes to pay the ferryman.
Have you got any Bay City Rollers?
Stadium Rock wasn't always rubbish. Some bands used the space and volume to crush the listener into wilted obeisance. Many of the bands, oddly, were from the Midlands, Shisho One, where they're used to that sort of thing. Hello there, the Electric Light Orchestra, whose first avowed attempt was to fuse classical music with rock, and then make it like something off Magical Mystery Tour. ELO came to epitomise all that was pants about stadium rock. Light shows, stupid clothes, and props. ELO used to come on stage in a spaceship. It wasn't a good idea.
My friends, the Electric Light Orchestra.
Oh my God, we were expecting ELO and instead we got an alien invasion.
Oh no! Lights opening! Oh Barry, I'm scared!
Ah, it's a lot of men with frizzy hair and cellos. Run away!
Stun and confuse your friends by telling them that...
Lager's Fact auf der Osterende.
While it's not okay for rock bands like ELO to dress like Dilberries and come out of a spaceship, if, say, Funkadelic do it, it's brilliant. Unfair, but cool.
Pardoning on the mothership, I am the mothership connection. Get down in 3D.
And then there was punk. Stadium Rock, like P.D. James, Switzerland and geography teachers, was completely unaffected by punk. Like a huge Gulliver made out of Gitanium, it stomped across the stadia of the land as little new wave soldiers fired feeble muskets of punk at it. And once, where on a good day, Stadium Rock might be quite fun... weird, or even a bit cool after a jazz woodbine.
How I wish you were here.
Stadium rock became completely,
look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it,
and utterly,
look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it,
soulless,
look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. Play the guitar on MTV.
The 80s there. The worst time to not like stadium rock. So much was it the worst time to not like stadium rock that the major musical event of the decade was Live Aid, a charity event that took place in not just one, but two stadiums. Stadia. Sir. After that, it became okay for previously undergroundy and NME bands like U2 and Depeche Mode to stick a big metaphorical syringe of steroids into their legs and go stadium! And so, rock music became loud, bloated, and empty like an unsuccessful disco inside a dead whale. Ah, poor whale. Rock as we know it ended. MTV ate the world, and they took Top of the Pops off. Mind you, it wasn't any good. I blame Andy. L was still on. Soon, all bands will be stadium rock, even weedy soft cry bands like Belle and Sebastian. Au revoir!
Hello, Tristan! We're Belle and Sebastian, and this is a little number we like to call Dog in a String, yeah!
So there. Good night. Farewell. See you next week.
The Blagger's Guide is written by David Quantick and Simon Poole.
The script editor was Steve Punt.
Presented by David Quantick.
The voices which were formed out of the mouths of and performed by were
Kate O'Sullivan and Lewis McLeod.
Audio production was by Chris O'Shaughnessy.
The Blagger's Guide was a unique production for BBC Radio 2, yes?